Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next 30 minutes. On today's show, a few feel-good stories. As the end of the year celebrations approach, we take some time to talk with people involved in their community, people who have been giving so much of themselves to help others. We'll first turn to the eastern provinces where Feed Nova Scotia has been assisting thousands of households in the Halifax area alone. We speak with Karen Thériault, a longtime volunteer.
There will never be enough food charity to meet the needs of our community. We have some 170,000 Nova Scotians who are struggling with food insecurity.
A Terrace, BC resident has been recognized for his charity work by the province. Barry English was honored with the Medal of Good Citizenship.
Now, I want to make this very, very clear and stress it. I do not volunteer for attaboys and pats on my back and thank yous and things like this. See, what I do because I want to. I have the times and skills to do it.
Heather Haynes, a Guanacoke artist and storyteller, received the 2023 YMCA Peace Medal Award for her work in the Democratic Republic of Congo. She sells her artwork to support vulnerable women and children.
Yeah, I think that if you have a gut instinct to do something, follow it. Don't let your mind tell you that it's impossible. You don't know that until you try.
This and a little more on Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Well, welcome to all of you. Feed Nova Scotia has been operating for about 30 years, addressing food insecurity in that province. Every year, it collects and distributes more than 3 million kilograms of food to 140 member food banks, meal programs, and shelters across Nova Scotia. This Christmas, the food bank will be assisting about 6,000 households in the Halifax area alone. It estimates that about 170,000 Nova Scotians struggle with food insecurity. Security, and this doesn't take into account the many who aren't reaching out for help. One in six households in Nova Scotia faces food insecurity. The food bank's goal is to raise awareness of the root causes of food insecurity and to provide support for individuals with low wages and inadequate income support. Feed Nova Scotia's communications director, Karen Thériault, has been with the organization for quite a while. She's with our Halifax reporter, Sarah Gouda.
Hi, Karen. How are you doing today?
Hi, Sarah. I'm just doing well. Thank you so much. It's always nice to be able to chat with folks and share a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes at Feed Nova Scotia.
Yes, thank you so much. So do tell us, what is going on behind the scenes at Feed Nova Scotia?
Well, when I look in the warehouse right now, I see a sort of beehive of activity with lots of volunteers packing up holiday hampers. And those will soon be heading out on our trucks to that network of agencies that you referenced across the province. There's a lot of work happening right now to provide some really critical food support, for sure. But I think also just that sense of comfort and peace of mind and community that people are also seeking at this time of year. It has been an extremely challenging few years, and the last few months in particular, we are hearing that additional strain in people's voices, just with the added pressures of the holiday season and so many challenges around the increased rise in cost of living that people are facing.
Do you find there are some items you're lacking due to these external factors and additional pressures and inflation?
Generally speaking, we are seeing that food donations from individuals and food drives are down. And I think that is perhaps not a surprise as we see the cost of food going up. Everyone is needing to be more cautious with how they are spending that limited budget. The community has always been very supportive, and every time that I see someone reach out with a gift of food, of money, of time through volunteering, it just makes such a huge difference. But there will never be enough food charity to meet the needs of our community. We have some 170,000 Nova Scotians who are struggling with food insecurity. And it's just so critical that we look at the root causes for why people are food insecure. That is through the Canadian Income Survey that is measured annually in Canada. But of that, we see about 42,000 distinct individuals reaching out to our network of agencies for support each year. There's still quite a big gap between those who are food insecure and how many are reaching out for help. And I think that speaks to some of the barriers that people face in accessing support in the community as well. It could be that someone needs the assistance, but they don't have the transportation to get to the food bank, or maybe they have mobility challenges that prevent them from getting out. And there are sometimes things that are less visible barriers that exist in terms of people being ashamed or afraid to go out and seek help, because it takes some guts. And I know, especially in smaller communities, people feel a little bit uncomfortable in asking for help. So in hearing this message, I hope that everyone will know that if they need support, that is the whole reason that we are here, is to help provide that support as best that we can. And there is absolutely no judgment or no reason to be afraid of asking for help. But for Christmas in particular, we've had about 6,000 households just in the Halifax area alone so far this year requesting additional support over the holidays. I would say we're likely going to land somewhere a little over 7,000 households by the time all is done.
Can you tell us a little bit about the people that you assist?
So food insecurity certainly knows no barriers. About 1 in 6 households in Nova Scotia are food insecure. And so when someone reaches out for help, we do everything that we can to provide that support. There is no sort of screening tool, if you will, that would say someone is eligible to receive it or not. If someone asks for help, we provide the help. What we do know is that people aren't food insecure because they don't have enough food. It's because they don't have enough money. And so those root causes stem back to inadequate income assistance rates, inadequate wages. You know, minimum wage is vastly below what the living wage is determined to be in Nova Scotia. And so people simply cannot stretch that limited dollar far enough when it just isn't there to begin with. People living on income assistance are almost $16,000 below the poverty line. We know right now, especially, that the lack of affordable housing is also a huge crisis.
What are some ways the province can tackle this problem?
So we've been speaking one-to-one with various government officials, and we'll have another opportunity as well in January to present at the Standing Committee on Community Services, and have really been asking for folks to look very strongly at those income-based policies where we can affect change. Income assistance specifically needs to increase to at least the poverty line, the low basket measure, which is how it's measured in Canada, and as well to index for inflation. Secondly, we would significantly look to rapidly increase the minimum wage, and to find ways to reduce out-of-pocket expenses for prescription medication. We hear from at least 56% of those supported by food banks that they are skipping on their prescription medication because they simply can't afford it, or they are jeopardizing their food intake as they instead divert those limited resources for prescription medication. So neither of those, I mean, that's literally an impossible choice. And it just demonstrates how tightly linked food insecurity and health outcomes are for individuals. You know, there's never a dull moment. What I am constantly inspired by is that sort of sense of community, kindness, the way that Nova Scotians look out for each other. It gets tough at times because I feel that after 13 years, we should have made a bigger long-term impact than we have. And that can sometimes be disheartening because we shouldn't still have in Nova Scotia, 1 in 6 households struggling with food insecurity. There's no reason for that. That is a choice that we are allowing ourselves as a collective citizenship to make. But I also feel really good knowing that people have found a lot of relief, a lot of nourishment and comfort that they wouldn't have had otherwise if it wasn't for the folks that are donating to help. Folks never give up on each other and continue to show up for their neighbors. And I feel proud that the community trusts us with their generous support to affect change. And the way that we steward those donations to both provide food support today and to raise that alarm bell and raise awareness and education around the root causes of food insecurity. I think that we will see lots more discussion about that in the year ahead, and really look forward to having the community rally behind to continue to just let everyone know that food insecurity isn't welcome in Nova Scotia, and that it's time to make a big change.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
A longtime Terrace resident has been recognized for his charity work by the province of British Columbia. Barry English was honored with the Medal of Good Citizenship, along with 14 other recipients. The Medal of Good Citizenship honors BC residents who have acted in a particularly generous, kind, or selfless manner for the common good without expectation of reward. English has been living in Terrace, BC since 1952. His volunteer work dates back to his Boy Scout years. He's put up signs for the NDP, served as an executive for the Terrace Art Association, and now focuses on the Northern Animal Rescue Alliance, NARA. These days, English focuses on collecting recyclables for NARA. He has raised over $79,000 in the last 4 years for NARA. He says he's actually a little embarrassed about receiving the medal. He only does so because he wants to do it and has the time and ability to do so. Journalist Morgan Button had a chat with Barry English.
Well, my parents moved here. My father was here during the war for training. And he fell in love with the country. Now, he's a Saskatchewan farm boy, so he had never seen mountains until he came here. But he fell in love with the place, and so after the war, he came back and logged for a few years and then did a lot of other work around Terrace. And, well, of course, he brought us here, his family here, and I've been here ever since. I've volunteered all my life. I was taught really early that you do what you can to help who you can. And so basically I've been a volunteer right from Boy Scouts and Wolf Cubs up. I was president of a union local for a while. I've been involved with the community for most of my life, really. I spent 40 years as the drum sergeant for Terrace Pipes and Drum Society and taught a lot of kids how to play drums. But in the last 8 to 10 years, it's been concentrating mainly on Northern Animal Rescue Alliance. Started off with fostering dogs and a couple of cats, but mainly dogs. And that evolved into doing bottles, and of course some of the foster dogs that we fostered we kept. It's a term called failed foster. I've been pretty well sorting the bottles for the last 6 or 7 years anyway. So that's my main focus now, and I raise a lot of money doing that.
Barry went on to talk more about his work with NARA in the recent years.
Rescue Alliance is a fantastic organization, and because I've been involved in charities and volunteering almost all of my life, I know how they work. And NARA is one of the far better ones. We have a large group of people willing to do things. That's why I can concentrate on doing just the bottles, because there's lots of other people to do the fostering, to do the rescuing, to do the medical transfers and all the other things that come along with being part of an animal rescue group. And there's a big jobs and a lot of people put in a lot of time. I'm just one of them.
Barry has been collecting recyclables for NARA for about 6 years now. He even has a box in front of his house for people to drop off their returnables. But there's also a variety of businesses in town that donate to the cause. I asked Barry if he has any favorite organizations that he's worked with in the past, which he doesn't. But he also wanted to make sure that people know the reason he does what he does.
Oh, I love them all. That's why you do it. It's Now, I want to make this very, very clear and stress it. I do not volunteer for attaboys and pats on my back and thank yous and things like this. See, what I do because I want to. I have the times and skills to do it. But I've been involved in a lot of things. I volunteered for the New Democrat Party for a lot of years, putting up signs. Long before that, I was on the executive of the Terrace Art Association, and I don't keep track of it, so I can't remember everything I've done. It's not important. If something needs doing, you do it.
And even though Barry says that he could think of a bunch of other people who deserve the award more than he does, he was the only Northern resident to receive the recognition. This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story on canada-info.ca.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You are tuned to Viewpoints. Check out our stories online at canada-info.ca and follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.
Guanacoke artist and storyteller Heather Haynes was honored with the YMCA Peace Medal. The YMCA of Eastern Ontario recognized two local peacemakers at the 2023 Peace Medal Award presentations in Brockville, Ontario, and Heather Haynes was one of them. The medals were given out during Peace Week, which is an annual event where YMCAs across Canada celebrate acts of peace and recognize individuals or groups who have demonstrated a commitment to building peace in their community or in communities around the world. So, Heather Haynes is an international artist living in Guanacoke, Ontario, but also the founder of a nonprofit organization called The Art of Courage, an organization that supports vulnerable women and children in the Democratic Republic of Congo. My art led me there, she says. She first left Canada for Uganda in 2008 and ended up going to the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2011. A book written by Lisa Shannon called A Thousand Sisters inspired her to do so. She says she felt a responsibility to do something. I just started painting and I found opportunities to show my work. I'd raise funds through the sales of paintings, events, and fundraisers, she says. This experience led her to paint 80 orphan children who were in this home. She called it the Wall of Courage. The Art of Courage charity started in 2018 and now educates 400 children and is run by a staff of 23 people. If you have a gut instinct to do something, follow it. Don't let your mind tell you it's impossible. You don't know until you try, says Heather Haynes. She's with journalist Karen Musna.
You are a YMCA Peace Medal recipient, so congratulations.
Thank you.
So I'd like to take this time to talk a bit about your work, which is, of course, what you're being recognized for through this through these awards. I understand a lot of your work is based around raising awareness and funds for vulnerable children and women in the Congo. And I'm curious to know, what brought you into this work?
Well, my art led me there. I've always had, my art has been connected to charity in some way, like giving back to the community, which then led me to go abroad to Uganda in 2008. It was the people that really affected me. And I turned some, you know, a part of a body of work towards the people there. And then I ended up going to the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, in 2011, after I had read a book by Lisa Shannon called A Thousand Sisters. And it told about the women, the stories of the women. And I felt as though I wanted to meet the women and create paintings of them so that I could tell their story, if that's what they wanted me to do, to raise awareness for what's going on there.
That's certainly what I picked up on. I had the chance to look at the trailer for Common Thread, a documentary film that I understand is in the works. And I understand there was a line in there where you said that they spoke their truth in order to change their future. And you talked about how you took that journey with them. Tell me a little bit about that journey.
I guess the thing is, if you put yourself in front of difficult stories, you have a responsibility to do something. And their stories were horrific. They're impossible stories to sort of reconcile in your heart and your mind. So in order to activate something, I just started painting. And then I found opportunities to show my work and tell people, and they'd feel it from the paintings. And one thing led to another, that I would raise funds through the sales of paintings or events, fundraisers. I had met a man on my second trip there. His name is Kazungu Hubert, who was looking after 16 orphans at the time. And we started corresponding over 4 months. And at the end of the 4 months, or just 4 months in, the M23 rebel group was invading the city of Goma, where he lived with the children. And I decided that day to see if I could raise some funds to build a home for those kids, because they were being evacuated from the home that they were living in, which was really like a shack or a barn. And 1 year to the date that I had met him, in January 10th, the year before, they moved into that home, and the 16 children had turned to 80. So all of a sudden, I had a bigger commitment on my shoulders than I ever had intended. And that led me to create an 80-piece installation called The Wall of Courage, that I painted all of the 80 children that were originally in the home. And then I started touring that to raise funds to then build a school. And a friend of mine came with me, and 10 women told us both their stories. And so then she started a women's training center with the ideas of what the women wanted. And that's been going on for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years now as well. So
what do you feel is your role as the artist in this?
It's all I know how to do. So that's what I continue to do, and to use that platform to reach people and to raise funds. So my responsibility is just to be honest with where I'm coming from, I guess. I think it's just a human connection to, you know, if people are suffering, I believe that we need to do something to stop them from suffering.
I understand currently you're looking to partner with businesses and also looking for 10 new child sponsors before Christmas. Can you tell me a little bit more about both of these initiatives?
Yeah, so we started a nonprofit in 2018 called The Art of Courage. So this has formalized the support we're giving to this community, which is really great, because there's then a lot of people are helping me to do this. But we have 23 staff. We have 400 kids that we're educating. It's become a lot bigger of a project than I could ever have handled on my own. So we created a nice deck where businesses could join up and help paying a teacher's salary for a year, or buying school supplies for a classroom. So we're trying to get creative ideas that businesses could then come on and partner, and we could highlight them and they could be highlighted over there. It's just a community here supporting community there.
What would you say to those who are perhaps, you know, again, aware of some of these inequities in the world and even in their own community? What would you say to those people who would want to make a difference, but may perhaps feel like, what is it that I could really do? You know, that feeling?
Yeah, I think that if you have a gut instinct to do something, follow it. Don't let your mind tell you that it's impossible. You don't know that until you try. If I hadn't have just thought, I will try, I'll take that one small step, none of this would have happened. And I don't have, you know, this huge network. I'm not a wealthy person by any means. I'm an artist. I make, you know, my money selling paintings, which from the small town of Gananoque is not, you know, the most lucrative place to do that. But somehow it's, I think, because the intention is good. I think that if we follow those impulses when they're out of love, that I think we'll learn a lot, and it will always lead us somewhere better and better for others. When you're kind to someone, then they're kind to someone. And that's the kind of energy we want to spread, instead of fear and impossibility. There's possibilities. We just don't see it enough on the news.
Well, I'm glad that you're sharing that with us and our listeners today. Sometimes we need to be reminded of that. So thank you for doing that.
Thanks. Keep it simple.
Well, Heather, thank you very much for speaking with me today. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, same with me. Thanks so much.
And that was my conversation with Heather Haynes, an artist living in Gananoque and founder of nonprofit organization The Art of Courage. Heather was recognized for her work by receiving a Peace Medal from the YMCA of Eastern Ontario. I'm Karim Mosna.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI and get all our stories on canada-info.ca.
A new economic alliance was signed last week by the Confederacy of Treaty 6 First Nations. The event took place at the River Cree Resort and Casino, located in Enoch, Alberta. That's in the greater Edmonton area. Present at the event were Neil Mills, project manager of the Confederacy of Treaty 6 First Nations, and Grand Chief George Arcan Jr. The plan for the agreement is to create access to large-scale investment projects for all the nations to work on collectively. Mills says that the plan has been in the works for a really long time, and all parties are excited to finally get it done. In Edmonton, Alberta, Ryan Hunt spoke with Grand Chief George Arcan Jr. and project manager Neil Mills.
Treaty 6 First Nations held a press conference to announce the signing of a brand new economic alliance.
Today is a historic day for us in Treaty 6. We've decided to work together to create an economic alliance that will hopefully create more economic sovereignty for our communities within the Treaty 6 territory.
Grand Chief George Arcan Jr. is very happy that this agreement was made and is optimistic for what the future holds.
It's a very fulfilling moment for me. I think if we're going to move to economic sovereignty, we need to do it not with baubles and beads. We need to do it with refineries and pipelines. and I think this starts to move us in that direction.
Neil Mills, project manager of the agreement, has spent a lot of time working in different communities to help educate and get the agreement made. It was a long time coming.
This has been ongoing, you know, probably 3 years, and then COVID put a gap in there. But essentially, this kicked off last November with the pipe ceremony, and we've been basically going for just over a year.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
And that's it for us at Viewpoints this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Our reporters were Ryan Hunt, Karim Mosna, Morgan Budden, and Sarah Gouda, National Coordinator Maureen McEwen, and Stéphane Bénard. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in Ottawa. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassagne. Please tune in to all our stories on canada-info.ca. Find us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Thanks for being with us. See you next week.
On the air with Viewpoints. Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI.